Inside Wirtschaft, der Podcast mit Manuel Koch.
Welcome here from the New York Stock Exchange. Joining us is the legendary Einstein of Wall Street. It's Peter Tuchman.
My pleasure.
Good to see you.
Yes, always. Always. Welcome. Welcome to the team.
Peter, how is everything here? Did it change the last 2, 3, 4 years a lot?
You know what? I think it has changed a lot. I think, you know, we're dealing in a post-COVID world. You know, they've made a big effort to make this place. We are the last human interactive brokerage platform in the world. And so I think there's a big effort in the way the market is trading. We've got crazy volatility. Think about post-COVID, right? You know, the world, the market's been on fire. We're trading record highs every single day. Even in the eyes of all the difficulty that the world's having and the economies are having, this market seems to be just proceeding in a huge way. So I think they've made a major effort to, like we're doing an IPO today. So things have changed. We've reevaluated the whole concept of having humans involved in the marketplace. I think the fact that humans are here now is more relevant than ever, right? For a while there, it's the electronic market was sort of overtaking that. But with the volatility we're seeing in the stocks are not reacting the way they used to. You know, I always joke around. I said, this is not your grandfather's stock market, right? It's different. Right, you've got companies where they come out with earnings and guidance. We've seen it this week with Meta. We saw it with Tesla. Tesla's earnings could not have been worse, yet the stock went up. Granted, it was oversold and there was a reason for it. But you had Meta whose earnings were good and it went down. So I think the volatility and the importance of having humans interacting with the marketplace are all the more important. And so, yeah, the whole atmosphere has changed a little bit in a good way.
So one thing that changed is the inflation. We are now in an inflationary circumstances. Do you think we will have to live with that the next years and we will go back like in the 70s or so? Or do you think from your perspective, inflation will come down, yields will come down, so what we have maybe 10 years before?
So look, I'm a firm believer in really analyzing where we are coming from and not looking at that. Look, the cup is half full, not half empty. If you think about it, we are in the inflation rate at 8.5%, where we were a year and change ago, which definitely was really difficult. Globally, obviously, our inflation rate is less than most of the rest of the world. What we pay for gas, what we pay for eggs is, while high for us, is definitely less than most of the world pays, was a function of the fact that we got, look, in 2007 financial crisis, we put $800 billion into the market, Federal Reserve did, to prevent the failure of all the banks. It took us 9 years to get back to even. We had COVID, which is the grandest, most horrifying economic debacle in history, as well as a health and situation. We had never seen it. And so the Federal Reserve really looking intensely at the potential of a complete global shutdown in the eyes of the pandemic, that they felt necessary to put $3 trillion into the market over a 3 month period in order to fight what was the global pandemic. And we were able to get back to even by August. Imagine that. In March 23rd, we hit bottom, right, for that period. By August 19th, we were back to even, and we were up 20% for 2020 and 28% for 2021. All of this is obviously printing money, but I'm a firm believer that if we didn't do it, I think we would all be on breadlines right now. We were able to support the companies that were not able to be sustained during 2, 3 years of people dying in the streets, a complete economic global shutdown. However, the collateral damage of this was obviously inflation. So Federal Reserve tools are to raise interest rates, to pull money out of the money supply, to try and get inflation back in check. Think of where we were. A year and change ago, we were at 8.5%. We are now at 3%. So I don't look at where we are now. I look at where we just came from. And it's kind of like if you go on a diet and you want to lose 35 pounds, you change your diet. The first 30 you lose is easy. The last 5 pounds is really difficult. We got from 8.5% inflation to 3. Now we're having trouble losing that last 5 pounds. And we're also seeing that I think we're in a good place. I think the Federal Reserve's tools worked. I think they maybe overplayed their cards a little bit because January, February of this year, and think of it, we had a great last year. 2023 was really good against all the odds. Everyone was talking depression and recession and all this stuff. That did not happen. You know, the first quarter of this year was the best quarter since 2019. What happened in April was, I think it all caught up with us. that the economic numbers, the data was not, was a little bit hot, right? I think we overplayed our hands a little bit. And so we're in a situation here today on May 1st where the economic data may not support three interest rate cuts. Think about it. We started talking about cutting rates when we were done, not even done raising them, right? And I think that was a problem. So we were talking about seven cuts, now three cuts, now two cuts, maybe even a raise, because the CPI and PPI numbers have been disappointing. So I think inflation is under control. I think we still have some work to do. We will know today what his position is about cutting rates, if we will, how many, what is the percentage. I think the market, even though we are had a terrible April, I think there are a lot of moving parts. Think about it. We had a major banking crisis last year. We got through that. We are in the midst of two major global wars, and still the market is only trading a couple percent off that. So in the eyes of all this, the market is incredibly resilient. I think the investors are resilient. They're putting money to work. This is real money coming into the marketplace. So I don't think we're going to have to live. I don't think it may tick up a little bit, but I think we need to really put it in perspective and think it could be worse. I grew up, my parents always said to me, it could be worse, right? It could be a lot worse. We could still be at 8%. We could be paying $5 for gas. You know, we could be doing, you know, the world could be, even though I think the world's in deep trouble in so many different ways, I think net to where we were a year or two ago, we're in good shape.
Peter, you underlined how important humans are. How important is it to like have a financial education to be active here on the market?
So it's important for everybody to note that in during COVID, so before COVID, you had to be an accredited investor to be able to trade the market, meaning that you had to prove if you opened an account at Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, that if you lost 100% of the money you invested, that it would have no effect on your standard of living. That meant that this was a very exclusive club. You had to be a very 1% of the 1% to invest. What changed, what I call the democratization of the trading community during COVID, was that everybody with an iPhone and $100 could suddenly trade the market. All the barriers were down, right? And you had Robinhood and Webull and TD Ameritrade. All these trading apps came along and it opened the doors to 40 million plus new retail traders coming into the market. For me, that's a wonderful thing. This community will be the next generation of traders. However, none of these platforms offer any kind of education about the markets. Everybody comes in here thinking it's a get-rich-quick scheme, that they just throw a dart at the wall, or they listen to Uncle Herbie on the internet to give me a signal where to buy and sell stock. And at the end of the day, as you know, it takes work to be a value investor. So for young retail trading and this investment community, the new generation need to understand that they need to learn technical analysis and risk management. They need to learn the tools that the market gives them. That, you know, stocks do go up and go down. You can make money on the way down, but this is not, you just can't throw a dart at a wall and hope. Hope is not a strategy for trading, right? Yeah. Hype and FOMO and fear of missing out, these are not legitimate strategies. You will at net get hurt in the market. You know, 8 out of 10 new day traders, right, end up blowing up their accounts and they don't make it in this business. So now that everybody's been invited to the party, I think it's imperative that everybody goes out and does the work, whether they learn from you or whether they learn from me, people who have experience.
Maybe from both.
Maybe, yeah, that's it'd be great. Thing. Yeah. That's so important because, you know, at the end of the day, in 20, 30 years, the people who are now just getting into the market are going to be, you know, the valued investors, not only traders but investors in the marketplace. As the old guys, you know, die off and move on, right? So you know, education is the key to this thing working.
There is another party later this year, the U.S. election. Do you think there would be a change?
A party? Is it going to be a party?
I don't know, right? Do you think anything could change for the markets, or is it the same after every election almost? Like
so
same?
Historically, election years don't have a big effect on the market. I think that we are, you know, in a situation that's probably unmatched by the fact that you've got Mr. Trump making an attempt to come back. You know, he's trying to decide, should I go to jail or should I become president? And I think that's a bit controversial. He doesn't have a lot of policy. You know, he's a bit of a wild card. So markets don't like unknowns. right? We saw when he was president, you know, one day he woke up and decided he would throw tariffs on Chinese goods and the whole market went, you know, upside down, right? So I don't think markets can deal with the unknown and anxiety around a president who is such a wild card. I think Mr. Biden is a little more, even though he's an older guy, but he has experience. He actually has policy as far as that goes. What the market and people, you know, who are supporters of the Republican Party like, their whole story is the fact that they want their taxes lowered, right? And that's one of his biggest games. At the end of the day, look, I'm a firm believer, if you're making money, you pay your taxes, it's all good. There are other things that are important. So if he becomes president, things will change. If Mr. Trump becomes president, you know, let's think about it. Under, you know, everybody thought that under Biden, Democrats, usually markets don't do as well as under the Republicans. Although under Biden, after the Trump era, we are hitting record highs every day. So obviously what he's doing something right, you know, because in the eyes of a banking crisis, an interest rate, a major interest rate story, an inflation story, and a world post-COVID, with all that being said, we are still trading at record highs every day. So he must be doing something right. So my gut is that I don't think we want to change. And if we have a change, we want somebody who's not as much of a wild card. So
you talked about age. Will you ever retire?
Absolutely not. I'm 137 years old. I feel better than I've ever felt before. Why would I give this up? This is my office. It's the greatest job in the world.
Peter, so good to see you.
I still have a lot of work to do, right? We have to educate the rest of the investment community.
So you could not retire?
No, I could never retire. No, it's too much fun.
And we really hope to see you here in 10 years and 20 years.
Absolutely.
And we will do our interviews then as well. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Und wenn euch diese Sendung gefallen hat, dann abonniert gerne den Podcast von Inside Wirtschaft und gebt uns ein Like.